Next week is the centennial of Duke Ellington's birth. We're starting our celebration a little early. Let's get back to our 1989 interview with Duke Ellington's son, Mercer. After Duke died in 1974, Mercer took over the band and conducted it until 1996, when he died of heart failure at the age of 76. Much of Mercer's earlier life was also spent with the orchestra, working his way up from gopher to trumpeter and road manager. Let's listen to a 1989 recording of Mercer Ellington conducting the Ellington Orchestra in the third movement of Mercer's suite, Music is My Mistress, which was also the title of Duke's memoir. Understood when your father was getting older that you would take over the band after he died?
Absolutely not. I mean, it never occurred to him. It never occurred to me. Only thing, if it had occurred to me, I would have studied piano much more seriously than I did. But all I cared about was getting into the orchestra. And I knew if I played piano, that wouldn't happen.
You played in the Ellington Band, didn't
you? Yes.
How long did you play?
I was with them for 1 year in 1950 and left to form a record company. And then again, I joined them in 1967 to stay.
Did you have to audition to get in?
No. I guess the word is con my way into the orchestra. When I got in there as a trombone player, they were very short of musicians because the business was so good. Everybody who was a soloist could have his own band. But later, he needed a road manager. And all his friends had turned him down because they said they wanted to remain his friend. And the last man he could think of was me, so he called me up and said, I want you to be the road manager. I knew what trouble he'd had in trying to find someone. I said, yeah, I'll do it, on the proviso that I play trumpet as I do the road manager. So he put me in as a fifth wheel. Actually, I was the fifth wheel. There were five trumpets there at the time.
And that's how you became the road manager, too.
Right.
You ended up being the manager of a band where you knew all the musicians since your childhood.
And which is the worst handicap you can have.
Yeah, because they probably thought of you as the kid, even though you weren't the kid anymore.
And it wasn't that so much. It was just one of those things. They thought of me as the gopher. That was my first job.
So you'd have to run out and get stuff.
I still have it. I have every job left that I started out with. I still go get the sandwiches. I help with the baggage. I help set up the bandstand. And I have to do the copying and also make arrangements.
So how did you gain respect and a sense of authority when you became the road manager?
Never did get any respect, I guess. You talk about Rodney Dangerfield. It was one of those things where, you just hung in there long enough to be accepted. And I think this is the main thing. We had people who joined the band and quit because they'd come in for weeks and nobody even say good morning to them. There were no two men that hung out with each other in that orchestra except Bonnie Bigard and Ben Webster.
You know, it's so hard to imagine that because hearing the orchestra, it's such a really gorgeous unit. And to think of everybody squabbling all the time when they weren't playing is,
Well, I used to call them the Yankees. they were all great musicians, and they could play wonderfully together. And they argued like mad, but whenever the weight dropped, I mean, they could come in and they would do the job.
Did you have to worry about disciplining the band members for lateness or for drunkenness or things like that?
you don't discipline a musician for being drunk. I mean, that's part of his creativity. And if you take his inspiration away, it's part of what it takes to be in this business. I was advised by my father to drink because you won't have the inhibition to relax and to even have flowing ideas. I'm not recommending drunkenness. I'm talking about drinking. And so if you're going to drink, one day you're going to have a little bit too much to drink, and you will get drunk. But as far as alcohol is concerned, it has constructive purposes. I mean, even now, people advise wine instead of tranquilizers. So I will not admonish, or nor did I try to discipline anybody because of alcohol. I had things I had to try to get, instill. That was making time for bus calls and trying to keep the guys from, going too deep into their money because I knew most of them had responsibilities.
Yeah, I want to ask you something about alcohol again. Did you find that some musicians could hold their liquor well and really play really well after drinking and that others really couldn't? And that it would affect their performance badly?
No, I never found... I really frankly can say I never saw a musician who could not perform well whether he'd been drinking or not.
Uh-huh.
It was almost protocol for Ben Webster to have a drink or to... In fact, Pop would get Ben high if he possibly could every time there was a record date because he knew that Ben was so busy trying to be absolute whenever he was recording for him that his nerves wouldn't allow him to play as well as he could play when he wasn't inhibited.
Huh. That's interesting. As several people have pointed out, I think music wasn't your father's only mistress.
Well, I mean, since you brought it up, I want you to know that when I wrote the theme title for the album, my way of composing it is that each of the themes represents one of the five most important women in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And the one, it's odd and strange that the one that you picked to play represented one of the most congenial and most beautiful and wonderful ladies of all. Her name was Evie. And it was that she was a very a serious lady, and she's a lady he spent really the majority of his life with. He had paramours, but for the most part, she represented his real love. And he, from time to time, would take an excursion, but he always returned home. And as a result, we have a thing of like, I mean, I guess if he imagined himself to be anyone, it had to do with sort of his religious belief. And he kind of came up with a feeling that he was somewhat related to King Solomon.
What do you mean?
Well, King Solomon had I would say, a bevy of women who represented him and his concubines and so forth.
How did you feel about your father having paramours? Were you comfortable with that as his son? And did you ever get close to any of the women who your father was in love with?
Well, I think so, particularly with Evie.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one we were talking about originally.
Mm-hmm.
As far as what he was concerned, the way I felt about it was this man had done such a marvelous job with himself and for everyone. I can tell you this, that during the course of his lifetime, he took care of an entire family. By that I mean, people who were cousins, uncles, aunts, and so forth, their businesses had failed. And I felt that with him having done so much for other people to make them happy, he was entitled to the happiness which was important to him.
Mercer Ellington, recorded in 1989, he died in 1996 at the age of 76 of heart failure. The centennial of Duke Ellington's birth is next Thursday. On that day, our guest will be music critic Gary Giddens. This is Fresh Air.